Lifestyle.
You'll forgive me if I don't stay around to watch. I just can't cope with the freaky stuff.
Jesse, show me that smile again. Show me that smile. Don't waste another minute on your crying. We're nowhere near the end. All right, that needs to stop right now. Hello. Welcome
Hi.
To the New Flesh Podcast, a podcast about horror movies and all things tangentially related to horror and the horror lifestyle. Which six weeks, oh my God. I'm out of breath. I was like, I needed to go that hard on that song. This week, the horror lifestyle includes the Paramount. Is it a Paramount Players movie or a?
Yeah,
a
word.
It is, isn't it?
Yep.
It's a Paramount major, like regular Paramount release, but it's also a Paramount Players release, which is like their arm for straight to video stuff for the most part. Or straight to streaming stuff. Like, I think Orphan may have been a Paramount Players.
Was it? Yeah, I think it's like for a while it was like stuff that was focused more on minority filmmakers and minority, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And this movie was, I think, expected to go to streaming. And then they had a good test screening and they swerved it onto the big screen.
Wow. Well, that would explain that. I had no idea. So we're here to talk about Smile. Parker Finn's Smile, writer-director Parker Finn. As far as I can tell, this is a debut, a feature-length debut. I know this was a short to start, but we're here to talk about Smile. And first and foremost, Jesse, happy October.
Yes.
It's finally, I'm assuming everyone who listens to this podcast's favorite time of the year, where the general public shows as much enthusiasm for the hashtag horror lifestyle for 30 days or 31 days. We'll give them the full month for 31 days. The same enthusiasm that we have all year here at the New Flesh Podcast. The Food Network Halloween cookie and cake shows are out.
Oh yeah.
All the horror releases are honestly, they didn't just sneak up on us. They like pummeled us. There are so many horror movies that I've watched in the past couple weeks, because I attended remotely the Fantastic Fest festival, which is a Austin-based genre thing. So I saw a lot of stuff there. I'm also at New York Film Festival, where I would say at least two of the movies I saw so far there are definitely hashtag horror lifestyle. And there are many things coming out this month that you, listener, can watch. And there's stuff that's already out that you can watch. So I wanted to make an announcement up top that we're really going to go hard in October. There's going to be a bonus, at least one a week. Jesse and I will work out the scheduling. You don't need to know that. But there are going to be, yeah, there's going to be at least five bonus episodes by my count in October. And let me tell you what they're going to be. And Jesse can veto them. but I have a bonus number one. This is going to be the Netflix episode. We're going to talk about Rob Zombie's The Munsters, which is out now on Netflix. And we're going to talk about Mr. Harrigan's Phone, which is out on Wednesday on Netflix. Yes, 2 days from the day this episode came out. So that will be maybe our first bonus episode. I don't know how we're going to schedule them, but that is going to be one. Bonus episode number two for October is going to be Deadstream and VHS 99. Both of which are out on Shudder. Deadstream's out this Friday, and I can't recommend it enough. And VHS is out later in the month, so maybe we'll cover this episode later. Bonus three is going to be the Neil LaBute Justin Long movie I've been pestering Jesse to watch that's on VOD and I think nowhere else. House of Darkness, and then a Paramount Plus horror slash sci-fi indie low budget thing that I really, really liked that for some reason they're Paramount's absolutely dumping on Paramount Plus this Friday as well. That's called Significant Other. It stars Michael Monroe and Jake Lacey. And then bonus episode number 4, this is where we're getting into muddy waters. Maybe we'll do one on Hocus Pocus 2.
I'm ashamed to say I've already watched it.
So have I, Jesse. So have I. My Best Friend's Exorcism, which I will admit I didn't get through when I had the screener, but now that it's out, if Jesse watches it, I might be down to do that. And this is a wild card, Jesse. The Bring It On slasher movie that debuted on Sci-Fi this week, I believe. It is a movie, but it's a Sci-Fi original, and I have heard nothing but heinous things about it. That's why I haven't watched it yet. But that's a possibility for... So that's bonus 4 was My Best Friend's Exorcism and Hocus Pocus 2. Bonus 5, Jesse, could be Bring It On, whatever it's called, something Cheer or Die. I don't know what it's called. Something like that. Bring It On, slasher movie, and Spirit Halloween, which is a real movie starring... Who's in it?
Christopher Lloyd.
Christopher Lloyd is in Spirit Halloween. As far as I know, he's the star of it, but I don't know. Might be one of those situations where it's a cameo, but it gets all the marketing. But that movie's all about marketing. The whole thing is just marketing for a fucking store. So it feels weird to give it its own new flesh episode. So can Jesse and I get through all that shit in October? I've already seen most of it. So I am promising that I will at least talk about all of those things. Hopefully Jesse can join me on the journey, but that is a lot to ask of anybody. And that's all bonus fodder, Jesse. That's not even main feed New Flesh October stuff. So this week, we, of course, have Smile. Next week, the big release is Hellraiser. Straight to Hulu. Very disappointing that it's straight to Hulu. It's not a theatrical thing. But it's a big, splashy Hellraiser reboot slash sequel, I'm going to say, because I've seen it, Jesse. And we're going to talk about that next week. And that is, of course, leading us into our Hellraiser series rewatch, which I can't fucking wait to do. I haven't done it since, I guess, on the podcast in 2015 when we last watched all those movies. So I'm excited to watch all the Hellraisers again. I've seen Hellraiser 1, 2, and 3 and a couple of the sequels a million times, but doing it in order and leading up to the sequel I think, Jesse, what we should do is cover Hellraiser next week as planned. And then, of course, Halloween Ends is the week after that.
Yes.
And then we can start our Hellraiser series rewatch. But cool. Then once we do the rewatch and however many weeks it takes, however many breaks we have to take for new releases, after we go through all of them, I'm going to make you watch the new one again. Do you agree to this?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I'll be going into the new one having seen the first one only, which I did watch on Friday.
So. I'm like almost mad that you did that because it would have been fun to be like, what? Like, know nothing about it. Then I guess you have to, then that leads you to me making you watch the new one like 3 different times. So it's probably best for your life that you
thought about
it already.
I would be down. I think that would be really fun. I'm writing about the new one. So I feel like I had to know what I was talking about a little bit.
So I will make Jesse talk about the old Hellraiser, definitely, on the new Hellraiser episode before we get to the old one, because I can't wait to hear about what he thinks about it. So that was a big preamble, all to say it's October. It's the time of the year where horror thrives, and we're going to try to get through all of it. And I haven't even mentioned all the Fantastic Fest stuff I watched. I don't know when I'm going to cover that, but I believe I'm going to be on Jacob Q. Knight's podcast, Secret Handshake, to talk about Fantastic Fest. And hopefully he will let me just take that audio and put it on this feed so I don't have to do it twice, because that's a lot of movies. I think I've seen 16 movies at Fantastic Fest, Jesse.
Good God. Good God.
16 in a couple weeks. I had COVID during some of it, so that's why I watched a lot of crap. And then New York Film Festival, I think I'm at 7 for the week, which was, you know, for week 1, that's a good amount.
It's even before it started on Friday, so you really are. It's like week 0 or week negative one.
The press screenings, we got the early week or whatever. But New York Film Festival, Jesse and I will cover on a bonus for sure, whatever we deem worthy of talking about. And oh my God, that was so much preamble. What do you got going on before we go to the news? Anything?
I have some news.
Wait, you're fresh. Okay, yeah, I was gonna say you're fresh off of seeing Lyle Lyle Crocodile. The people need to hear all about that. But what is your news?
I can't talk about Lyle Lyle Crocodile. I'm embargoed on Lyle Lyle Crocodile. The people up top will not allow me to say my piece about Lyle Lyle Crocodile. I attended the world premiere. Wow. Like I'm some kind of awards ace or Disney, like YouTube shill.
Jesse is being silenced.
I was in the room with Shawn Mendes. I was in the room with my man Scoot. I was in there with Constance Wu. I was in there with directors Will Gordon and Josh Speck, who I found out were directing this movie by going to the premiere and having them introduce it. But I've been silenced. I cannot talk about it. I cannot say anything about this movie that stars Shawn Mendes as a singing but not talking crocodile. He only sings. I can say that. I'll reveal that.
Was that
he only
like sings. In the email? They're like, you can say that he he only sings. He communicates via song.
Only via song. Yeah. So I'll certainly circle back to that one. I know my news is
a rule follower. I'm just kidding.
I'll give you a little sneak peek. I'll let something. I don't think this counts as a.
If you get an email from the who is it? Paramount? Who made this movie?
Sony. It's Sony.
If Sony emails you because they heard you give away a detail from Lyle Lyle Crocodile on the horror movie podcast The New Flesh, I will eat this hat that I'm wearing.
I deserve whatever is coming to me if that happens yeah. Because I would be so impressed if Sony was listening to the episode. I can say the movie confused me.
Is your daughter also embargoed? Let's get her on here.
I tried to get her to confirm a plot point with me after, and that was not easy, and I can't tell, so that just left me more confused. I can't tell if I missed the plot point, if she missed the plot point, which sometimes does happen. Sometimes we'll watch a whole thing and then she'll be like, well, why did his father do that? And I was like, that wasn't his father, that was his, you know, that was his brother or something, you know, like.
You're like, no, honey, that's a crocodile. That is not a man at all.
she's sick, so it's hard to get, it's not as easy when I go with, you know, with you or my wife or someone who I trust to be like, so what happened in that scene? So, but there were things I was confused about plot-wise in the movie. I can also reveal, I think, within the confines of the embargo, that my daughter was impressed by the amount. I was like, was there enough cat in it for you? Because there's a cat. There's like a cat that the bad guy has, but who's friends with the good guys. And she was like, yeah. I was like, was there not enough cat? I kind of thought she would say, oh, I wish the cat was in it more. She likes cats. And her answer was no, there was just the right amount of cat. So wow. There's the pull quote for Lyle Lyle. The movie about a crocodile, just the right amount of cat in this one. don't be dissuaded if you think it's just a crocodile. There is also a cat who neither talks nor sings. No, the thing I was going to actually share is that before I went to go see the world premiere of Lyle Lyle Crocodile in beautiful New York, New York, I went into Spirit Halloween and it was so much fun. And I actually hadn't been in one in probably years. And it's so much more of a to-do than it was last time.
Was Christopher Lloyd in there?
He was not disappointing, but there's just like lots of stuff. Like, you know, I always like thought of this as just like, oh yeah, it's where they like set like, racks and racks of like cheap licensed costumes and like cotton full, you know, that's supposed to look like spider webs. And there is that, but there's all this like
a costume of Cotton Weary from Scream 2.
Yes.
It's just the suit. It's from when he had a talk show.
Yeah,
that was like, what was it called? Talking Cotton or something? Yeah, it had a funny title.
Exactly. It's just unsold Cotton Weary costumes for decades. all your favorite Scream characters, the Sheriff Dewey costume, the deputy Hicks, is that her name?
Deputy Hicks is her name. Yes, Marley. Yeah. Yes. The show he was on was called 100% Cotton.
Oh, okay. That's great.
Perfect. Not to be confused with 60 Minutes 2, which is what Gail was on.
It's somewhat less prestigious than 100% Cotton is to be on 60 Minutes 2.
The funniest thing is that we've lived long enough for like streaming to, you know, every cable network or basic cable network to try their own streaming service. So we basically did get a 60 Minutes 2 that was for their CBS Plus or whatever.
Well, I remember 60 Minutes 2 like did okay. I mean, because like, I used to follow the ratings as a kid, and 60 Minutes was a fucking powerhouse. And 60 Minutes 2 was like on Wednesdays, and I feel like it was just like not the same because it wasn't at that Sunday 7 o'clock, you know, everyone settling down and bearing down and accepting that the weekend is over. 60 Minutes just doesn't work on a Wednesday or whatever, but man, I'm sure on streaming it does. I was just surprised that like going to Spirit Halloween, that there was like, it's like a great junk store now. Like they sell like, you know, I want some Universal Monster socks and like,
oh cool.
You know, they sell like stupid little horror baubles. Like you can get like stuffed toys. My friend Nathaniel tipped me off to this of like, you know the part in Beetlejuice where Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis like mess up their faces?
They like pull their faces back. Yeah.
You can get plush toys of those faces.
That's terrific.
It's great. It's just, it was a nice experience. I can't speak to the movie because I haven't seen it, but the experience of going into a Spirit Halloween was much cooler than I remembered it being whenever last time I went in was, which was probably like 10 years ago.
I'm catching you at the right moment to ask you to watch Spirit Halloween, the movie,
yeah,
with me.
Oh, I'll definitely watch that. Yeah, no, if it's a half as fun as going to Spirit of Halloween for 20 minutes.
That's the issue with the movie. It is much longer than 20 minutes.
It's like, if it was as long as a regular trip to Spirit Halloween, I think it would be perfect. I like kids horror movies, so I'll watch it, sure.
All right, I forget what I was going to ask you, so I'm gonna move right on. Quick plug for my other show that is going to be a day late this week, so it's out tomorrow, but it's a day late because I'm covering New York Film Festival, and I managed to watch, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, I believe it'll be 10 movies that are out out on Friday.
That's too many.
Too many. Smile, Bros, Hocus Pocus 2, The Greatest Beer Run Ever, God's Creatures, Walter Hill's Dead for a Dollar, Anna Lily Amarpour's Mona Lisa and the Blood Moon, which is another one that we could add to our bonus list.
Yeah, I want to watch that.
Vesper, which is another one we could add to our bonus list, which is a sci-fi movie, but it's horror adjacent enough. The Devil's Workshop, another one that, God damn it, it wasn't on my list. It needed to be. That's another bonus. Devil's Workshop, a movie that I hadn't even heard of that's out this week. That's from Lionsgate, I think, and it has Emile Hirsch and Radha Mitchell, and it was actually really good. I think that was 10. There's 10 movies. Mark, who I do the show with, Mark Dusick, markreviewsmovies.com, he did even more. He did 12, and because I had a screener for The Good House, but I let it lapse.
Expire, yeah.
Uh-huh. And I don't really care enough to catch up, so we're just going to pretend that one doesn't exist. But very exhaustive episode this week. And what else did I want to mention? Oh, up top, I sang the Growing Pains theme song. We didn't really talk about it because I think we were both traumatized. So we can just move right on. But I always confuse the Growing Pains theme song and the Full House theme song. So, like, that was the Growing Pains, which is Show Me That Smile Again. But in my head, it goes right into the Full House. Everywhere you look. Yeah, it fits perfectly. So, do with that what you will. We've been talking for 17 minutes. And by that, I mean me. I've been talking for about 17 minutes. So, let's get right into the news, and we're going to breeze through it. Jesse, this is shocking news. Apparently, The Crow reboot, which we've been reporting on for this show for, I think, the whole 7 years we've been around. I think we've been reporting on it. The Crow had a 10-week long production and is done. It has wrapped production. Bill Skarsgård.
I don't believe it.
I don't believe it either. It's so funny. We all like the Crow is like the boy who cried wolf of horror remakes, where they keep saying, like, don't worry, it's coming. And it's been 7 years or whatever, however long it's been. So, how many different people were supposed to star in this movie? I can't even name them at this point, but there were several. Jason Momoa, I think, was the most recent.
Yeah.
But the current, the actual guy who did it is horror icon, I'm going to say it, Bill Skarsgård. If not for it, for Barbarian, even though he's just a nice guy in Barbarian. Spoiler alert, shit. If you haven't seen Barbarian, what are you doing listening to this podcast? So, 10-week shoot in Prague. The Crow shot across multiple locations all over the Czech capital, blah, blah, blah. According to documentation with the city, The Crow was registered as a TV production with a total of 6 episodes shot on prog locations? Wait a minute. So you're right, and this isn't real. Hold on. As far as we've heard, this is really disgusting. The Crow is indeed a feature film from director Rupert Sanders of Snow White and the Huntsman and Ghost in the Shell remake. And FKA Twigs is co-starring. And Zach Balin wrote the script. And so as far as we know, it's a movie, but it was shot. The notation, the documentation shows it's a TV show. So the Crow movie's still up in the air, as far as I am concerned.
They That's could the still make sure it doesn't come out by making it a TV show and turning it into something else.
Yeah, we could ultimately prevail.
Proving it could actually turn out to be True Detective season 4.
I'm game. Nosferatu, the Robert Eggers project that we last heard, I think, was like falling apart or not going to happen. He's been planning to direct a new take for a long time. It was going to star Anya Taylor-Joy. And it looks like the project's finally coming to life, but it's a different iteration of the project. And now you're never going to believe who's going to star in this. It's Bill Skarsgård of The Last Bit and Piece. He was starring in The Crow a minute ago, and now he's starring in the Nosferatu, Robert Eggers' Nosferatu with Bill Skarsgård and, drumroll please, not Anya Taylor-Joy, but Lily Rose Depp, one Jonathan Depp's daughter. They've boarded the film. Bill Skarsgård's reportedly playing Nosferatu / Count Orlok, and Anya Taylor-Joy is reportedly off the project. In the new reimagining, the pick is a gothic tale of obsession between a haunted young woman in 19th century Germany and the ancient Transylvanian vampire who stalks her, bringing untold horror with him. Eggers is directing, and he also wrote the script. F.W. Murnau directed the original 1922 version, and it rocks. If you never taken a German film class or something like I did in college and you haven't seen that shit, watch it. Watch all the Murnaus. See all the Dr. Mabuzas. Get in there. All right. What else was announced this week of interest, Jesse? The most clunky titled franchise is back. Are you ready? Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming. This is the... Is it a fourth movie or a reboot? Do we know?
I believe it is a fourth movie, but set further in the future. I'm a big Planet of the Apes guy. I feel dumb saying that because my buddy Nathaniel is like really the hardcore Planet of the
like
Apes.
Like he watched the originals and shit, and you're like, I mean, like the new trilogy, or do you like the old ones too?
I like the old ones too, but like I learned about a lot of this stuff from him. That's the only way. Like I feel like a poser.
Stolen Valor.
Like, yeah, exactly. It's Stolen Valor, but I do love the original Group of Five. I did really like the new trilogy also. Notably, the original, you know, the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is very much in keeping with Conquest of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. And that movie rocks.
Yes, it does. Oh, you are correct. That is perhaps my favorite of the original five Planet of the Apes movies.
I liked that one so much when it was on TCM, I think, that I went out and bought the out of print Blu-ray of all the there's like a set that is out of, that was once like $10 on Amazon, but is now out of print, and I had to pay not that much, but like more than that on eBay to get.
I'm kicking myself for not buying that when it was $10. I remember clearly when it was $10 on Amazon. Me too. I didn't buy it. Fools.
We have the same horrible brain, but you know
what? A new one. Yeah, I think it takes place from the timeline of the ones that we are familiar with from the Andy Serkis and Matt Reeves, etc. things. I think
You don't call it the Franco trilogy?
Yeah, the Francos. I do love the first one the most.
Yeah, the first one is very much the best one. And the second one I remember liking. The third one I fucking loathed. Like,
really?
I did. I can't put my finger on why, and I think it was just because it was boring and like just overly dour to the point of like I appreciated how dour this franchise was before, but it's like, okay, now you're just getting full on Holocaust imagery, and I'm like, this is too fucking much. I just didn't enjoy it. I think it was also like, wasn't it called War of the Planet for the Planet
war
of the Apes?
War for the Planet of the Apes.
Like it took place after the war. Like it didn't have the war in it. It just like. It pissed me off. I remember not liking it, but I really loved Rise so much. I think we all did. We all were
it's so cool.
Holy crap, that movie's awesome. So Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, definitely a drop in quality of directors here, though. We got Wes Ball.
We got Wes Ball in the house. I will say, I
Has he directed anything besides Maze Runner movies?
I was going to say, besides those. No, I don't think so. But I hated the first Maze Runner. I was so bored with it. I fell asleep like as a defense mechanism. I thought it was awful. And I watched the other two. I think someone hired me to review the third one. So I was like, ah, fuck, I got to watch the second one now. I watched the second one on TV and I was like, that's all right. It was actually all right. And I watched the third one and I was like, yeah, I like that. That was good. So I don't know why I liked the second and third Maze Runner. Was I just in a horrible, horrible mood when I saw the first one?
Well, Jesse, I mean, how could you deny the like compelling nature of the Scorch Trials? I understand entirely.
The death cure in the Scorch Trials, man, that's where it's at. So now I was weirdly like, oh, maybe he'd be good at making a Planet of the Apes movies. They're pretty like fun, you know, junky sci-fi movies. They're not like great or anything, but it's true. It's a big downgrave from Matt Reeves and from I forget the name of the fellow who did the first one. Rupert,
Rupert Wyatt.
He's good. Yeah. I like that one a lot. So yeah, this is definitely maybe he's stepping up his game. Maybe the Maze Runner was just the beginning.
Yeah, maybe this is the start of West Ball auteurism. We're going to see people like treating him like Paul W.S. Anderson and shit.
That's right.
There's already a still of the movie, because that's what you can do when your movie's all computerized. There's a still of a monkey on a horse with presumably... I don't want to spoil war. Didn't Caesar die at the end?
Yes, he does die at the end.
So maybe this is not Caesar.
No, I think it's like far enough in the future that it would be like
just a new character.
You know, it would be. It shouldn't have any characters in the previous one, I don't think.
Well, I like Maurice, Jesse, and what am I supposed to do when they don't give me my Maurice?
Yeah, why Cookie Rocket, for fuck's sake?
Why Cookie Rocket? These movies fucking rock. Anyway, that is coming out in 2024. Starts production next month, and the only name I recognize as a cast member is Owen Teague, who's definitely been in some horror stuff.
Yes.
What else we got horror news wise? Blade was supposed to enter production in 2 months and the director just quit, I believe, or got fired. I'm not sure how it happened, but he says it's been an honor working with the wonderful folks at Marvel. We were able to put together a killer cast and crew, eager to see where the next director takes it. So director Bassem Tariq has exited the project. Stacey Osai Kufer was recently brought on board to write the script, and the movie has a cast including Delroy Lindo, Aaron Pierre, and of course Mahershala Ali as Blade. I love Blade so much. I already was like, you know, assumed that the Marvelification of it was going to be bad. But now the director leaving, does that bode well for the project? Probably not. We have no details here, really. Sources say that Tariq will remain attached as an executive producer. There's nothing about what happened. He's not the first director to exit a Marvel movie, though. Let's run them down. Scott Derrickson left. Doctor Strange 2?
Yes.
And there was all that stuff. Well, Josh Trank actually did direct Fantastic Four, didn't he?
Yes. Let's say the most famous is probably Edgar Wright leaving Ant-Man after years of developing it.
Years. And like, I feel like that was
the only reason. The only reason they were making Ant-Man is because Edgar Wright was like, oh, I would make Ant-Man. And they were like, OK. And then,
yeah, he definitely was done dirty by that. And now Ant-Man is like a very popular character. But the Peyton Reed movie's fine. I would love to see what Edgar Wright's Ant-Man looks like. And I'm sure. Has he talked about it? Has he like released the script or anything like that? I'm like,
I don't
wondering.
Think so, but I think he's talked in interviews about which bits and pieces of the final film were like stuff they might have originally conceptualized when he was on it, which is, you know, as you would expect, it is like, you know, bits and bobs of it were sort of like in place for him.
Right on. Probably the biggest news this week is that Hugh Jackman is returning to the role of Wolverine, which we all knew he like retired after doing Logan in 2017. But there's a loophole because Logan was set in the future. So that allows Hugh Jackman to slip back into Wolverine and say, that was still the last role. I'm just going backwards now. That's what he said on Twitter or in the video, I think. Yes. Anyway, Marvel Studios has hired sisters Wendy Molyneux and Lizzie Molyneux Logan to write Deadpool 3. Those are Bob's Burgers writers, and I only know that because one of them follows me on Twitter. So this is the start of a campaign to get the new flesh in Deadpool 3 somehow, in some fashion. Hashtag
yes,
at Wendy Molyneux and say that guy you followed on accident 6 years ago or whatever. Put him in there.
He wants in. Yeah.
He wants in. Yeah.
I want to be part of one of the quips. Make us a quip.
You know what? I'll write my own dialogue and it's going to be the Chimichanga will be in it. Don't worry.
We guarantee you guys don't have to mention Chimichangas.
So, you know, Deadpool made $782 million. The second one made $785 million. They made the same amount of money. They both made almost $800 million worldwide. Of course, we're getting a third one. Is this notable because, like, it's the first one made since Disney? Is that not even true? Is it true?
It is true. It is true. It's okay. The first one since the Disney acquisition of Fox. There were, you know, rumblings about, is it going to be R-rated? Is it going to be... Or even how... I was wondering, as a misbegotten fan of the Fox X-Men movies, I was wondering how closely it would connect to those. Because those Deadpool movies, kind of people forget, are... They're the biggest grossing of the Fox X-Men movies. They have characters from those movies pop up. There's lots of jokes about them. There's a running thing in the other movies about him wanting Wolverine to be in them. And of course, he wouldn't because he's like too big a star or whatever. It's kind of, I don't know. I think their movies are fine.
Well, Jesse, I think he's going to have some sort of look to the camera opinion about Wolverine starring in this movie.
I think he might. Well, but it is interesting to me that they are like, I kind of figured once Disney acquired Fox, the Deadpool thing would be like, oh, he's going to be like zip zapped into the MCU, which I think this is going to be in continuity with the MCU somehow. And he'll be like making quips about, you know, he'll just be like interacting with a couple, you know, it'll be like Ant-Man and Wong will be like Deadpool sidekicks in it or something. So using the Jackman Wolverine is just really interesting because it's like, oh, they're really not saying, oh, no, let's hold off for our own Wolverine that we're going to cast in a few years or whatever. They're saying, like, no, we're definitely going to maintain some kind of strong connection to the Fox X-Men series. I just really love that this series refuses to die. Like, everyone was kind of like, oh, yeah, Dark Phoenix kind of killed it. And then, like, New Mutants was still there. And then they're like, well, now it's really gone because, like, they've been sold off and they're not going to do more. They're going to reboot the X-Men. But no, Deadpool 3... will continue the Fox X-Men series, and that makes me weirdly happy, even though it's kind of cheap that they're getting Jackman back.
I mean, yeah, I have the heart for it, too, where it's like, not only was it, like, the first superhero movie to kind of start the genre, I feel like, in 2000, but, like, I have vivid memories of seeing it and loving it, and, yeah, I'm interested. I'm more interested in Deadpool 3 now that Hugh Jackman is involved, but I never saw Deadpool 2. And I don't think I'm going to.
You'll be completely lost.
Yeah, I'm going to be very lost. Jesse, my inbox just bleeped and I got a new email. And it's from the Lyle Crocodile premiere photos from the red carpet. Am I going to see you? Am I going to see you on the red carpet?
You're going to open them. It's actually just going to be a computer virus to delete the new flesh because they know.
They heard. They heard me talking. They heard while you were recording. That's unbelievable.
I circumvented the red carpet because I was not dressed for it. So I just went over and got my tickets and quietly.
I expect to see a picture of you with your Mountain Dew and whatever else.
That's right. The Chucky keychain that I bought at Spirit Halloween. It'll be on my backpack in the red carpet.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. A few project announcements. Trick or Treat 2, which has been in development for years and years, is now in active development. During a Beyond Fest screening of Trick or Treat this week, Michael Dougherty said that it's in very active development. That's all. That's the only news. On a related note, Trick or Treat is being released in Regal Theaters on October 6th. You can see it in theaters. And AMC Theaters beginning October 21st. So Trick or Treat appear. They're trying to make Trick or Treat a cult thing that is screening in theaters wide now. There's actually a note here. It's the first time the film has ever been released wide in theaters. So if you've never seen Trick or Treat, now's the time. What's your opinion on that movie?
I don't remember anything about it. I remember watching it at my buddy's apartment and being maybe a little underwhelmed, or, you know, it's a little uneven. I hate it when people are always like, oh, it's an anthology. They're always uneven. But I do remember it being kind of uneven. So, I would watch it again. I don't know.
I would watch it again, too. It's been a long time. And I remember liking it fine. But, yeah, definitely been a while. Samara Weaving is back in a action horror movie titled Asriel from writer Simon Barrett of The Guest and Your Next. Evan Katz is on board to direct. He directed a lot of The Haunting of Bly Manor. And Deadline's report notes that they're hoping they have a franchise on their hands. I feel like they could say that about any movie they make. Yeah. They all want, of course, they want it to be a franchise.
I hope we have a franchise on our hands. Yeah.
Principal photography starts next week in Estonia, and it's produced by a producer of Significant Other, which I really liked, Dan Kagan and Simon Barrett. We don't really know anything about it, though. This is a weird bit and piece I had to mention. Danny Boyle is directing a stage musical adaptation of The Matrix. It's like a dance. It's like a dance thing. The large-scale immersive performance experience is titled Free Your Mind, and the Warner Brothers Theater Ventures licensed project is set to debut next October in Manchester, UK. The official logline says, combining the hip-hop choreography of hundreds of dancers with the latest immersive design, Free Your Mind will take audiences on a thrilling journey through the Matrix into a new realm of possibilities. This eye-opening production will stretch across the building's ultra-flexible spaces, responding to them and harnessing the collective energy of the moment. Honey, cancel our anniversary plans. We're going to the United Kingdom. Free Your Mind. This sounds like something I would actually like to see, but I'm not going to, you know, if it came to New York, it was like enough of an oddity that I would go see it.
Definitely.
But what the fuck? It sounds weird.
Yes, it does sound weird.
Fright Night Origins, a novelization of the original movie from Tom Holland, the original writer-director. Apparently, Fright Night Origins is the first book in a planned trilogy to expand on the Fright Night universe. So if you're a big fan of the 1985 vampire movie Fright Night, or the remake from, 2009 or something? I don't know. The Colin Farrell one. If you like that one, too, check out the books. Fright Night Origins, out on October 14th. I feel like there's someone who will find that information interesting. Masters of Monsters, John Carpenter, is hosting a Godzilla marathon on Scream Factory TV on Godzilla Day, which is November 3rd. He will be presenting Godzilla, the uncut Japanese original, Rodan, Ghidorah, the three-headed monster, and the War of the Gargantuas. He'll make appearances throughout to discuss his great love and admiration for the franchise. Very cool. And it's always notable when John Carpenter does something because he hates doing things. So it means they paid him, and we love to see that. Joko Anwar, Satan's Slaves, Indonesian horror movie from Shudder. There's a sequel called Satan's Slaves Communion that was just acquired by Shudder and will be out on November 4th. The first Indonesian movie shot in IMAX. I believe it's also playing at Brooklyn Horror Festival, which I need to remind myself now to request all my tickets for, because I'm a week late on that. So Brooklyn Horror Fest, Satan's Slaves Communion, and Two Shudder, November 4th. The trailer for HBO's The Last of Us came out, and fuck, it looks great. The design of the clickers looks awesome. It just looks good. And before we go into Smile, I wanted to mention that Smile had a really fun and clever marketing campaign that they just like put creepy people in like the window of Good Morning America, or like sitting at a baseball game behind home plate, and they were just wearing a t-shirt that said Smile and smiling into the camera. And it was a brilliant viral marketing thing because everyone retweeted it and thought it was hilarious. So I wanted to mention that before we talk about Smile. Show me that smile.
I'm surprised that you are more familiar with the Vitamin C song, Smile.
It's terrible. I know that As We Go On, We Remember.
The graduation. Yeah.
What is
it's
Smile?
It's the same era. It's just like, I feel like it was her first big single. It's one of those singles from the turn of the century, the most recent turn of the century, where they like have a reggae guy, like, adding stuff in between, you know, like a Sugar Ray song where they'll be like, what's up baby, what's up baby, you know, in this case it's like some guy going, what you gonna do. It's like so cheesy and like, oh, we got the reggae guy to say 2 seconds of our song.
Oh, I remember
the greatest
song
in the world.
Yeah.
It's like extremely white bread, and they just stick a little reggae flavor in the margins of it. It's so fucking insulting.
Well, rest assured, this episode will be ending with that song.
Fantastic. Smile. It's a new horror movie that opened at $22 million at the domestic box office. I think it's the biggest opener of the month so far.
Yeah, easily, I feel like. Nothing's opening to 20. So Smile is a, you know, it's a mainstream studio horror movie, even if it was once a Paramount Players, we're going to put this on streaming horror movie. And it feels like a throwback in a lot of ways, right? Like, I feel like I haven't seen a movie with a crowd this, like, wrapped and, like, ready to, like, be scared together. It just harkened back to, like, The Ring or something.
Yeah, it's so much like The Ring. The Ring just turned 20, or is about to turn 20. And this almost feels like a 20th anniversary, like, celebration unofficial remake of The Ring, doesn't it? Like, it doesn't have the VHS tape, which is so iconic.
No, but it takes, like, modern horror's new horror, you know, whatever you want to call it, its obsession with trauma.
Yeah.
And, like, makes that the inciting thing instead of a tape.
Yeah, it totally does. And it is, you're right, it's weird. It doesn't feel like, it feels both, I'm going to be working out some thoughts that I'm hoping to turn into an essay, so excuse me if I end up babbling about this. But, like, it weirdly fuses stuff that feels very old-fashioned, because you're talking about a movie from 2002, not from, like, you know, not from 1955, but, like, it feels like movies that came in the wake of The Ring, where there's, like, that kind of doomy post-millennial, like,
I don't know, like, Malone.
Yeah, Post Malone, vitamin C. I'm just gonna free associate it, like, Dennis Miller here, babe. But, like,
yeah, babe.
Yeah, it feels like one of those early 2000s horror movies where they're kind of grimmer than a lot of, you know, like, you look at the most recent horror movies, I guess some of them are plenty grim, but, like, they're in such a different tenor. Like, the way that Smile is kind of grim and forbidding is very different from the trauma-centric A24-style horror movies, like Hereditary or Midsommar or
Relic.
Relic, where, and I like all of those movies to some degree, where they're kind of, like, you know, heavy dramas with really disturbing horror elements, but where, like, really foreground the kind of elements of trauma. This one kind of talks about that stuff, but it's also wrapped up in much more of a kind of, you know, designed to make you feel both scared and bummed out, like, you know, exploitation movie framework.
Yes, and you could argue this movie's even thumbing its nose at,
yeah,
the new,
I kind of
horror.
Thought so. Yeah,
I definitely thought it was, like, making fun of the idea of making a you know, a movie where, like, the monster is trauma, yeah. And it, like, takes that idea and it's like, oh, you want the monster to be trauma? How about we do that in, like, a jump scare horror vehicle where we're actually going to try to scare the fuck out of you.
Yeah.
And, like, it just sets up these set pieces that are, the whole point is just to make an audience, you know, scream. And
yeah.
I think it's a really effective jump scare vehicle, but also by, like, sending up the new horror obsession with trauma, it becomes its own special thing. 'Cause, like,
yeah,
it isn't just the jump scare vehicle, 'cause it does have weight to it, but, like, the weight is, like, thumbing its nose at the way trauma is presented in horror movies, and then also making a very, like, bleak and dour, it's telling its own very bleak and dour traumatic story. Like,
yeah,
if you get at what this movie's actually about, it's, like, truly horrific stuff. It's like, you know, you witness, it's about, this movie's about, how do I, is that a giveaway to say what it's like, you witness a murder, or you witness someone killing themselves, and then eventually you will kill yourself too, like, that's,
yeah,
what happens.
I think that's pretty clear that that's where it's going, even when they don't say it right away. It's like, yeah,
like, the smile is almost a MacGuffin by the, well, at least by the end of the movie, it completely throws it away, you know what,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, it's not really like, it's so much of the marketing campaign and, like, and the kind of central, you know, initial creepy imagery of the movie is having this, like, Joker-esque deranged smile as you do something really horrible, but that is, it's really just kind of a style thing. It's like, the suicide aspect of it is much more important to the what's happening.
Yeah,
in the movie,
it's almost like the whole smile thing's a marketing trick, but, like, I think that adds to the whole mystique of this movie. Like, I think it's, yeah, like, just a really unique package. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So the idea is that the movie, who's the first one? Does the first one that we see in the movie is the patient killing herself in front of Sosie Bacon's character, Rose? Is that
I feel
right?
Like, there's, like, a cold open on someone else, but that is the first, like, inciting incident that I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. And Sosie Bacon's a doctor, plays a doctor named Rose Cotter, who witnesses a patient who she's seen before and knows is not prone to suicidal thoughts, kill herself in front of her and has this like ghoulish, Joker-esque smile as she does it. And before that, she's come in talking about seeing things and how there's these things, this thing is all around her and it's right here in the room or whatever. And she can't, and Rose can't see it. But then the patient like goes silent and then has this horrible rictus grin and kills herself. And then as she investigates more, so much like The Ring, really, that she kind of backtracks and tries to figure out, oh, this person saw someone else kill themselves and that person saw someone else. And kind of
when it cuts to her Googling, I turned to my wife and said, this is an homage to The Ring.
Yeah. It's classic Google horror where she's just tracing, you know, oh, this, what did this person see? What
the
did this
Google
person
horror
see?
Thing became such a joke that Scary Movie 3 or 4 has a bit where Anna Faris is doing that. And then a bunch of pop-ups come up and like make it, like unusable. Like it is just such a trope, but you know, when this movie uses it, to me it's like having fun with the idea.
It is, and while it's one more thing.
Definitely using it, but yeah,
and it's, I would say that's one, you know, kind of minor quibble I'd have with the movie is that it's a little repetitive, like what is going on. It's so, because Sosie Bacon's,
well, because
character,
we've seen this movie before, so to speak.
Yes,
so like
yes,
we're watching her discover things that we already know are going to be discovered.
Right, you know? Right. So naturally, she starts seeing these horrible smiling faces and these horrible like images that are kind of imaginary, but like obviously there for her. And it starts freaking her out. Her fiance or husband, is it husband? I think played by Jesse T. Usher. Is not very helpful, and it's just kind of like, babe, what's wrong? Like, come on, what are you doing? Get your head together. And she has an ex played by Scream King Kyle Gallner from Jennifer's Body, but you might know from Veronica Mars. I don't know if people watch Veronica Mars.
He was also in this indie called Dinner in America that was at Sundance and never found a home and is now on Hulu, that if you haven't seen, Jesse, I'm recommending
I have not.
To you.
Okay,
I think you would
right.
quite like it, but I think a lot of people would like it. If you don't like the movie, I think it's a 3-star movie, but like it has a 4 to 5-star kick-ass song. And like the whole movie's about like them writing this song or whatever.
All right. I like that.
It's cool, man. It's a cool little indie with that guy in it.
He's been in a bunch of horror. I'm trying to think what the other horror movies are, because I know he has.
Was he in New Scream?
He was in New Nightmare on Elm Street, which is now it's no longer new. I don't know if he was also in New Scream.
He was.
Okay, yeah, they know their stuff then, because he's like a guy who's in a ton of horror. I don't know if he was. I don't think he was.
He's in
Stay
fucking
Alive.
Red Eye.
Oh yeah, okay. He's like, yeah, he's been around since
Haunting in Connecticut.
Yes.
He's definitely a Scream King.
Yeah, he's a Scream King. He plays her ex, who's a cop. So she, of course, enlists him to track down the people to try to trace this. You know, see if there's someone who survived this. It's even like The Ring, and that I don't think this is even a spoiler, because I think this is even in the trailer. She's like, what's the longest someone's gone before, like witnessing one of these killings where they don't kill them, the longest they go before killing themselves, and I think the longest is 7 days, much like the famous tape in The Ring. And so that's what the movie is really just like her kind of going around interviewing people, trying to keep her shit together and trying to figure out if she can dodge this horrible curse. And I think some of that gets a little bit like a little bit first level, a little bit like, oh, OK, what's she doing in this scene? She interviewing a fourth person, you know, which, you know, they're creepy scenes and they're effective.
It's definitely perfunctory. But like the movie skates by on the fact that it's wearing its influences on its sleeve, of which there are so many, but like it's paying homage to them in a way that's like, you know, it's adding to the movie you're watching. Like it's like, cause you're watching this genre movie, and I feel like when it's emulating The Ring, it works. When it's emulating It Follows, it works. I would even argue that like, you could argue it's like Final Destination-y in its like passing death around
for sure,
or skipping
for sure.
death.
Yeah.
You could argue it's got elements of Drag Me to Hell with her, like in Drag Me to Hell, when she finds out that the button is cursed and she tries to give the fucking button to some, she's at a diner and trying to like figure out who to give the button to.
Yeah.
And like, that also reminds me of The Box, which is a great underrated movie that I recently revisited and really, really liked. Also that movie, like a Denzel movie, Fallen. I feel like a lot of people
like, time is on my side.
Yeah, there's like so many movies that I saw in this movie, but none of them made me like, you know, cross my arms and go, oh, it's ripping off that movie. Like when I saw fucking Olivia Wilde do her Jordan Peele, you're sticking into the floor thing and Don't Worry, Darling, where like that, I had a different reaction to that than I did here. And yeah, why is that? Why
does that Yeah, it's galling in a way, I think, when to go off after such like a recent classic, whereas the stuff they're ripping off in Smile, I mean, sure, The Ring is obviously a horror classic, but, and a lot of these movies we're talking about are good. I like The Box a lot.
And I think this movie just does a better job of like emulating those without like straight just like, oh, this looks like that, and it's stealing that. Where,
no, it's sort of in the tradition of those things, and it's also just like
did you think that when there's like a big scary guy, I'm like, that's It Follows. Like that is It Follows. Like that is like there was a big tall guy in It Follows, and this movie like ups the ante to an even fucking bigger, taller guy that is like impossibly tall.
Yes. And it has, I don't know, I feel like it's also like an exploitation movie tradition, and like part of my problem with Don't Worry, Darling is that it wasn't willing enough to be an exploitation movie and to be a little like wilder and creepier and like less concerned with how clever it was. And this movie is not that concerned with being clever. It mostly just wants to like to fuck you up pretty bad. It has like give you some shocks and some scares. So that's kind of in the tradition of that kind of movie to borrow liberally from other horror movies. So that's
I'm trying to talk myself out. Like I was like, am I a misogynist or is there a reason why I think this? That's why we're working it out live on air.
I think this is a better movie than I liked. Don't Worry, Darling, more than a lot
this
of people.
This is a much better movie than Don't Worry, Darling.
It's much more effective at what it's trying to do. It's fine to rip stuff off if you're like doing it with such confidence and such like. It's also just like a very. I mean, Don't Worry, Darling has some nice tech craft stuff in it, but. This is like a really well-made movie. It's thoughtfully assembled. Like the camera moves for good reasons. Like it gives you images that are creepy and haunting. Like it works pretty well.
Yeah. It's one of those like debuts from a writer director where you're like, this guy has a fucking handle on how to shoot a horror movie and like how to make a jump scare and how to not overplay them, but like use the sound design, which is excellent on this movie, but also use silence and use like, not only show us scary things, but like use negative space and show us not, you know, don't show us anything. And that's also scary.
Yeah. Just like the color of for some reason in the hospital she works in, the like plain wall painting, you know, the painted walls are like normal, even kind of light and nice colors.
Yeah.
And there's still something unsettling about them. The way he frames them, the way he kind of frames the characters against these kind of like placid looking, calm looking colors. It's like kind of menacing in a weird way because you know something weird is coming. There's a kind of this, you know, it's like, oh, this is kind of, you know, look at these pink walls or these light blue walls. Like, isn't this calming? And so when you have like a grinning, horrible specter of a person set against these images, it really is like, I don't know, there's something really unnerving about it, even though it's not like scares, super gothic looking.
Yeah, a lot of scares do happen in bright situations in this movie, and that does it does have a haunting effect.
Yeah,
I think it was Scott Renshaw on his blurb that I read. He's a film critic I always read. I think he writes for some Utah paper or something. He said, you know, it's kind of a brilliant notion to connect the trademark of Rose's haunting visions, a dead-eyed smile, with the masks people put on to hide the effects of their trauma and the serial nature of the violence with the way trauma's effects can be passed along to children and others close to you. And it's a bummer that it kind of whiffs at the end and doesn't really connect. You know, it definitely like has all these brilliant, thoughtful, inventive like ideas that it kind of shunts off to the side at the end once it decides it wants to like have a third act that's just going to like be balls to the walls, new scary thing reveal. And I think it totally fucking works. And like, you know, it totally works in the moment when you're watching it. Like those are really inspired, what I would call like, ha ha ha, yes, sicko moments and some very memorable imagery in that third act that totally make up for the explainy fumble of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think it sort of like it loses a little bit in the final stretch, even though the final stretch has some like creepy as fuck, like cool, scary, gnarly stuff in it. It also does feel a little bit like, oh, okay, so like, you know, this isn't going to kind of go to the next level. And well, like,
It had the same problem that It Follows had for me, which is like it has rules until it doesn't, or then it just makes up new rules at the end where it's like, yeah, the pool or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it just, the rules don't feel real. They're just kind of like, what do you call it? Like gut, like what do you call when you're bowling? Like and you have the bumpers. They're like bumpers for its story. Like, they're not real rules.
Yeah, It Follows, I found that sort of effective because that whole, like, deal with that movie to me is, like, you can try to figure out these rules kind of based on, you know, these people don't even have, I guess they do have, like, newspaper clippings and go to investigate and stuff, but they're, like, these are, like, you know, borderline teenagers, kind of college-age kids, sort of putting together what they think the rules are, but it's sort of, you know, it's going to be sort of elusive, maybe, in a way that's kind of unknowable, and I don't think Smile does that angle as well because of the kind of atmosphere of it is a little more of a kind of multiplex shocker, which is in a good way. Like it's a good, you know, effective mainstream horror movie and doesn't have the kind of mood. There's a certain kind of like summer to fall mood of It Follows that I just love so much. And that's not really in this movie as much. And I do think that does kind of fall without that and without the, you know, the character, like those of the characters in this movie are not like wildly interesting to me. And I really love the characters in It Follows in a weird way. But it's like a minor thing. Like it works as a scary movie. It works. It just like, I think that without saying too much about spoilers, there's a kind of point, a certain point in this movie where I'm kind of like, okay, now like the movie's kind of admitting that we're just being dicked around, that sounds negative, but like, that's what horror movies do. Horror movies do kind of dick you around. Like as a lot of them do, not in a terrible
Barbarian
way.
Certainly did, but a totally different way just by through form.
It's so interesting to me to react. Cause I feel like both of those movies have gotten very good reviews. But I feel like there's definitely a contingent of people. I think our man Charles Romesco is one such, are very like pro Smile, anti Barbarian, kind of saying like, no, this is the kind of horror, like poor movie that people said Barbarian was, and this is more, you know, I don't know. Not that you have to choose one or the other. I like them both quite.
Yeah, I've seen that sentiment too, and I don't know what's behind it other than I just think some people, you know, what I think it is for Barbarian, and I totally understand it and sympathize, is just the amount of hype once you're seeing it in week two or three of people everyone in your life telling you that it's like, you won't see what's coming and it's so crazy. I could totally see it being underwhelming in those circumstances. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cause like nothing truly like the most fucked up thing I've ever seen in a horror movie happens in Barbarian. It's just the way in which it unfolds that is shocking. So if you're going in after all the hype, I have no idea what people are expecting at this point. And I'd imagine tons of people are going to be disappointed by Barbarian because they've been told it's the most fucked up thing in the world. And it really is just like a fun thrill ride. So I actually totally get that. I didn't think I did at the beginning of the sentence, but I did by the end.
He got there. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, there's something just, Smile is so fun. It takes that, it's about trauma subtext and just makes it the text. And somehow uses the Ring and It Follows template to make like a new kind of elevated horror, if you want to call it that.
It kind of does a nice job in some ways of dragging elevated horror back down to the depths where it belongs. I mean, I know I say that
that's a perfect way to put it.
When I say that, it's again, that sounds more negative than I mean it to about so-called elevated. It's more the term elevated horror that I think that we object to more, because a lot of times the things that people are describing when they try to use quote unquote elevated horror are things that I think are really cool, like The Witch or It Follows. Love those movies. Those are two of my favorites of the past 10 years, probably. It's more the kind of, the kind of shorthanding of like, oh, well, this is elevated, you know, like as if there weren't horror movies that were like sophisticated before.
Rosemary's Baby is a fucking elevated horror movie.
Right. You know? Exactly. Yeah. There's always been a strain of like kind of artier version of horror movies. And there have always been kind of exploitation movies that are still really worth thinking about and discussing in great depth, like Texas Chainsaw or Halloween or any number of other ones. But I do appreciate the effort in Smile to take material that you could easily see how this could be produced as a slow burn A24, like, you know, small budget, like
would have made half as much money. Yeah.
It's about trauma kind of thing. And then saying, oh yeah, but isn't this also just kind of like The Ring or like any number of mainstream horror movies? And like The Ring is a very good mainstream horror movie. It's like unusually good. And it's a much better crafted movie than a lot of what was coming out at that time. Especially on a couple thousand screens. But so it's a kind of this funny push pull between Well, we're kind of, this is definitely elevated by Kraft, and it's definitely better than a lot of, like, you think of all these horror movies in the 2000s that were just so clunky, all those kind of, like, shitty ghost ones, you know, like a, yeah. like the ones that follow the Ring. The Ghost Grudge, the Grudge remake. I mean, you know, the Sarah Michelle Gellar one, so boring. Pulse, you know, with Kristen Bell, like all those kind of like Asian horror remakes that happened in the 2000s.
With Jessica Alba.
All these kind of just like boilerplate, like boring movies. And it's just, I found Smile really interesting for the way that it sort of interacts with both like a very contemporary current horror thing and also like horror, cyclical horror trends of 20 years ago. I don't know. I'm sure some of that was intentional. I'm also sure some of that was not necessarily what the filmmaker was, what Parker is thinking about making this movie. Like, oh, I'm going to make fun of the eye or something. Like, yeah. I don't think that's really front of mind. I'm sure the most important thing for this movie was like, let's make it fucking scary and cool. But I appreciated as a horror fan, it has that kind of weird hall of mirrors. Like, what if Midsommar, but like via the Ring, or you know, it's not even like Midsommar at all, really. But like, you know what I mean? A24 horror, but like make it the Ring, which is just like,
yes, like A24 horror, but make it entirely reliant on jump scares. But they work and they're effectively staged, and no one's mad at the jump scares. And have that fucking nightmare scary imagery to boot, man. Like, it has. Spoiler alert for a specific moment, a certain character from a beloved comedy ripping his own face off was so fucking good. Yeah. And there's a couple more moments. They're just like, holy shit. And we haven't even mentioned the lead final girl, really, Sosie Bacon, who it's always annoying to point this out, but holy shit, does she look like the daughter of Kira Sedgwick and Kevin Bacon.
She does. It's almost distracting how much she does.
Like, at times you're like, oh my God, that's Kira Sedgwick's daughter. And then at other times you're like, that's Kevin Bacon's daughter. Like, you just totally see it. You could go into this movie not knowing that she's the star of it and leave going, I think that was the daughter of Kira Sedgwick and Kevin Bacon, which is kind of what happened.
I think you said to me beforehand, oh, you know, this is Kevin Bacon's daughter. And I think I had a momentary confusion about whether that referred to the lead of the movie or the younger
girl about the killer. Yeah, right.
And as soon as the movie started, even though I'd seen her in the trailer, I was like, oh yeah, obviously it's this person who is the daughter of Kira Sedgwick and Kevin Bacon. That has a kind of neat Hall of Mirrors effect of like, you're kind of going, did I see this movie? Like, was Kira Sedgwick in this movie? Did someone do this movie before? And it's not a remake and it's not like a reboot or a sequel or anything, but it has that kind of weird echo, because it even has a weird echo of an actor. I mean, she's very good, Sosie Bacon, in the movie. She does a great job, but it also has a weird effect of like watching someone who looks familiar but you have not really necessarily seen it much before.
The more I think about this movie, the more I like it, though. Like, the way, like, okay, so it's a movie about trauma, but specifically also how that trauma affects your loved ones and those around you, right? Like, this movie's about her alienating her nephew and sister, right? And like, that is something that we've seen in a million elevated horror movies. But this movie, the way that manifests is she fucking gives her nephew her dead cat. Like, it does everything in like a silly, fun way. And like, it tells this very familiar story, but is just constantly trying to like, I just feel like it's very crowd pleasy in that way.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the, I don't know what you want to call it, hand waving about, like the trauma stuff. Like, it's there and you can read into it, and I think it is actually deeper than it would appear. Like, I think it's actually really clever and smart what they're doing. But even if it, like, does it still count if they just write themselves out of it in the third act? You know what I mean?
I hate to say it's interesting to look at this in the wake of Barbarian, because that was a movie that, like, I think we all did our part to overhype that movie. Not even overhype, just like to get, we were excited about that movie because it kind of ruled. And I feel like I'm sure there are people who went out to Barbarian and were kind of like, oh, that's it. And I feel like the same thing could happen with Smile. I think you could rush out
we just described what it is. You know what I mean? You're going to like we told you what it was and you're not going to see it and be like, it wasn't like The Ring at all. Like, yes, it was. It fucking was. And it was about trauma.
It's like, true. I feel like I would understand someone feeling suspicious, because it's been like a really good year for horror movies, hasn't it? Doesn't it seem like it has been like
exemplary? And I've seen so many more that I would say add to that. I'm like, yes, there's so many more that we will be talking about this month and beyond. that add to the idea that 2022 is going to be like a banner year for horror, even though the Black Phone came out in that year.
Yes. I did asterisk that mentally. It's the biggest. It's also probably like what, the biggest horror hit of the year.
No, so it is definitely probably the biggest horror hit of the year. And unfortunately, that it is just an absolute terrible movie. No, I'm just kidding. I can't say that because so many people like it. It's very alienating. No, I mean, will not say that anymore.
It's good for the, you know, it's good for the business or whatever. Anyway, it's good that that movie was a hit. Like it'll probably result in more horror movies coming out in the theaters and stuff.
And hopefully less Scott Derrickson tweets.
Yeah, maybe he'll occupy himself with just continuing to make movies that are not to my taste, rather than tweets that are not to my taste. Wait a minute, actually, I don't even know why am I acting like making movies not to my taste is better? I don't know. Anyway,
yeah, well, they're not forced in your. You have to. Yeah, go that's true. See
no
them.
One, no one yeah. retweets the movies into my feed. Yeah, no, I think that's kind of the measure of the strength of it. Even if you take out the Black Phone and say, well, that wasn't really to my taste, it didn't really work for me. Like, you don't need that movie in here in the group to say like, oh, this has been a really strong year. You got like in this month alone, we got like Smile and Barbarian are both much more inventive and also really work as the immediate kind of multiplex. I'm going to go out on a Friday night and have a good time.
Yeah. And you know what else falls in that category that is not out yet? It's not a spoiler or anything, but The Menu. The Menu is coming out in a month or two. And that's another, like, it's definitely more of a comedy than horror, but it's definitely horror adjacent. And I would say it qualifies as like a part of the good year for mainstream horror shit.
Oh, that's great. That's
and a good year for indie horror, if you want to count for a good year if your name is Ty West. Yeah. You've got two movies that cost $1 million each and they you know, were made 10 times, one made 10 times that, one made 15 times that or whatever.
Yeah, it's such a cool range of stuff. And you have like Nope, which is like, you know, maybe more horror adjacent than pure horror, but like has a lot of scary stuff
definitely
in it.
Summer blockbustery horror vibes. Yeah. God, I love Nope so much. It's been a really good year. It's been a fucking great year. I'm so excited to talk about Hellraiser next week and several weeks and months, all the Hellraisers, but especially the new one. I am predicting like fans of Hellraiser, like me, I would say I'm a fan. I really like the first one and enjoy some of the other ones, are going to love it. And then like hardcore Clive Barker heads are going to be pissed off about it. And I'll explain why.
Interesting.
I'll explain why when we talk about it. I already teased up top all the different bonuses we're going to do in October. Some of them may spill into November. There are so many. I've got seven written down now, and I'm actually going to make a reveal right now. If you've stayed this long, congratulations. I'm not going to call attention to this reveal anywhere else, but right here. There's a movie coming out this week on Thursday in theaters called Terrifier 2. It's like a one night only thing. It's not a Fathom event, but it is getting a screening across the country. You can definitely go see Terrifier 2 in a theater. And I believe the original is on Screambox, which is the new streaming service that's like a Shudder competitor from Bloody Disgusting. Terrifier 1 is on there if you want to watch it. Terrifier 2 will be on there eventually. But Terrifier 2 comes out Thursday. I'm a decent human, and I don't want to make Jesse watch what is basically a snuff film level of gore. It is horrific. But also very funny and a great horror movie. And maybe you should watch it if you're interested. But the big news here, New Flesh fans, a lot of you have been asking this of me for literal years now. And I finally put out the ask and got it. Got the okay. Former New Flesh host Joe Avella will be returning for an episode on Terrifier 2. It is not going to be paywalled. I will put it out on the main feed, but it will be like a bonus in that it will be midweek after Jesse and I do a main feed episode. So you've got a lot to look forward to. I don't know when Joe can record, if it's going to come out like right after the movie comes out this week or if we're going to do it at the end of the month. But before Halloween, there will be an episode on Terrifier 2 with me and Joe Avella, old school New Flesh style. Just honestly, only because Joe is the reason I watched Terrifier, had never even heard of it. And he's like, this movie's fucked up. We watched it. We really liked it. I can't wait because Terrifier was like 80 minutes and Terrifier 2 is like 2.5 hours. And I think Joe's going to have a fucking hard time with that. And I really think it's going to be fun to talk about with him. So congratulations to those New Flesh listeners who can't stand me and have been waiting for Joe to come back. There's a few of you. They email me sometimes. So
what do they say in the emails? They say like, when is Joe coming back?
Some people have asked, can you ask Joe to come back? Some people have
that doesn't
said,
sound when, like they hate, that doesn't sound like they dislike you so much as they dislike me.
No, it's usually, no. It's on like reviews. It's some guys on Letterboxd will yell at me if I like hate a movie that they liked. It's like, they'll be like,
Joe would have liked it.
And like this. Yeah, it's basically the energy. That's the energy. Everyone loves Jesse.
No,
that's
no,
my
I
other.
Mean,
I have a whole folder of Jesse emails.
Tell him to stop talking about Alita. As most of the emails.
Tell him to move. That's what most of the people's. Yes. That's most of their feedback.
Tell him to live inside a house.
From under that bridge. All right. I hope everyone listened this far because that was a lot of great
that's
info.
That's a scoop. That's a scoop.
It's a scoop. Let's see if anyone on Twitter tweets it at me and figures it out. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with Hellraiser, which you can watch on Hulu on Friday, and you should. Bye.
Great one and all. Life, it ain't easy. Oh, it's so tough. Life, it ain't easy.
What you gonna do, sir? What you gonna do?
Put a smile on your face. Make the world a better place. Put a smile on your face.
What you gonna do, sir? What you gonna do?
Put a smile on your face.
All right.
Make the world a better place. Put a smile on your face.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do?
Put a smile on your face.
Oh, yeah.
Make the world a better place.
Put a smile on your face. What you gonna do? Put a smile on your face.
Put a smile on your face.
Come on, smile.
Make the world a better place.
Put a smile on your face.
Oh, yeah.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do?
People love you when you smile and hate you when you screw. Lots of happiness, Rasta know we are wishing you. You could have come from Jamaica or Honolulu. Hey, keep a smile on your face and see the good that you do. When we say up a door, smile, and everything will be fine. You don't know all the vibe kicking me inside. Love it when you smile, you look beautiful like that. Mugging from top. Your dimples are so cute. a lot of happiness in Smile.
Lifestyle.
You'll forgive me if I don't stay around to watch. I just can't cope with the freaky stuff.